The Nerdcast Empire is on the air. It is the Nerdcast News Report for Monday, March the 17th, 2025. I am Matt in the studio. Great to have you along with us as we break down all the news you need to know to get your week started here on the Nerdcast Empire. And kind of a light Monday as far as news goes, but we put some things together to talk a little bit about. And again, as probably will be the case somewhat regularly over the next month or so, and a little bit of news and rumors and leaks about the upcoming Switch 2 leading the way. New tag team champions on Friday on SmackDown. And a little news about an AI-produced anime that we'll talk a little bit about. And then we'll wrap things up with the Empire Express. Joining me in studio, as always, is Mike. Mike, how's it going?
It's going. Not too terrible of a news day today. No anime conventions burning down or new news regarding any of that. It's kind of funny. You think, like, of all the topics we cover, there's always going to be that, okay, where does that topic relate to AI at this point in time? Because you feel like outside of maybe pro wrestling, they're all going to be experiencing some interactions with artificial intelligence. It's just a matter of how much that permeates in each of those industries.
Yeah, it's something that unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how it's used, is going to be kind of an ongoing topic, and there will always be controversy behind it. And I think the news story that we'll talk about near the end is, I feel like it's kind of flown under the radar a little bit, but I feel like when it comes closer to coming out, I feel like we'll hear more about it, and whether people were okay with it or not will probably come to the surface. But before we get to the AI related stuff, let's jump to our first news topic of the day. And it's really kind of a combination of news topics, because honestly, with the Switch coming, or I shouldn't say it's coming out next month, it's probably not going to come out till June, but with kind of the grand unveiling that will happen next month and only a couple weeks away at the Nintendo Direct on April the 2nd, the leaks are starting to come as patents are filed and, you know, regulations are filed for, and people in the company kind of leak things out to try to keep the buzz rolling about the Switch 2. Game Rant's done a pretty good job of kind of compiling these and putting these out, and we're happy to kind of share them and give our thoughts. And really kind of a three-pronged news headline, I guess, with this one. And starting off with this first note about the GameCube controller could be making a comeback on the Switch 2. This, again, because of some filings that were filed, and people who cover this sort of thing really have nothing else to do other than just kind of keep an eye on these filings, these FCC filings, to see what's coming out. And anytime you have something that's radio controlled or Bluetooth, they have to go through FCC approval. But it does look like that some version of the classic GameCube controller will be available, if not at launch of the Switch 2, but possibly shortly thereafter. And I didn't really ever play the GameCube, so I can't really give a, you know, firsthand experience. But I do know, just reading this article, that clearly a lot of people still love the GameCube controller. Especially Smash Brothers fans, yeah. Evidently, that's really popular with them. There are, like, off-model, you know, knockoff GameCube controllers you can buy for your Switch. In fact, when I was looking for some art for this episode, I saw several different versions of that sort of thing that you can pick up. But this obviously would be a licensed product that would be supported by Nintendo. Curious to get your thoughts, as someone who's certainly played a lot more Nintendo than I have, about a potential licensed GameCube controller and kind of what that implies, which is GameCube games coming to the Switch too.
Yeah. You know, I think it's obviously the next in line for the Switch controller treatment. You know, if you go on Nintendo's website, and I own most of these, you can buy kind of the dual pack of the NES controllers. You can buy the SNES controller, Nintendo 64, even the Sega Genesis controller you can buy that works with your Nintendo Switch. So it was only a matter of time before we got around to GameCube. And yeah, GameCube, I think, is one of those systems that for a lot of people, was underappreciated when it was relevant, but as we've moved on, people have grown even more fond of it, and I think there's a large amount of first party games for the GameCube that now go for a high dollar amount. And if this means that we may end up seeing GameCube games added to Switch Online, I think that's certainly a step in the right direction. I'm curious too, because I'm certainly not a competitive Smash player or anything, but I wonder if doing this would then influence kind of future Smash titles in terms of how they play to kind of facilitate continuing using the GameCube controller as opposed to, you know, the Switch Pro or Switch 2 Pro controller, whatever that's going to look like.
Yeah.
I do like that in that story, they were basically going off of like the patent filing and what appeared to be the placement of where like a sticker was going to be or like the logo. And yeah, that was how they assumed that it meant it was going to be the label, how they assumed that's how they knew it was going to be the GameCube controller. It's kind of funny, but
yeah,
I dig it. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, it's an interesting design, as you see if you're watching on our video podcast live on Twitch or on YouTube or on the VOD. If you're not familiar with the GameCube, there's a picture of it there, and you get a shot of that controller, which is definitely unique, especially coming kind of from the Sony PlayStation path of gaming, and even those who came down the Microsoft path with Xbox. Nintendo has always been willing to kind of step outside the box when it comes to controller design, and this is definitely a unique looking design. I think, you know, the shape of it, you kind of have to get by because generally it's the same form as these other controllers, but the button layout is definitely very interesting. And I would have to think, kind of to piggyback off your point, I would think you're going to have some sort of, you know, controller compatibility, like you're going to be able to change how the game is played based on whatever controller you have. Sure. And I think you're right. I think if they're doing this, it is with Smash players and any other ported GameCube players in mind to be able to give you the authentic controls that you're used to. And it's, like I said, it's a wild looking controller, but the people who love it really love it, and I think they're the most excited from this news.
I just wonder back, and this probably goes even further back to like the Nintendo 64 days, I wonder like what the focus groups looked like that determined that your face buttons shouldn't be similar looking or similar shaped or similarly laid out. It's like you think of Xbox, you think of PlayStation, and even back before that, Super Nintendo, Nintendo, and it's like your main buttons all kind of just laid together like they were all the same button. It's like XBAY, like that they were all the same. And you know, both 64 and GameCube both were like, we're just gonna throw them wherever in weird shapes. And specifically the GameCube, you look at like how the A and the B button are different sizes. You know, you have the weird, instead of the C buttons, you had the C stick. Like, I just, it's amazing that was how what they landed on when everyone else was going for a more uniform, streamlined design.
They clearly had somebody at some point tell them that they didn't care for the fact that all the buttons felt the same, so that if you were playing the game without looking at the controller, which obviously you would not look at the controller while you're playing the game, that it was confusing. And somehow by making these different sizes and colors and shapes, in some case with the stick, like, you could much more easily go through the buttons without having to kind of hit the wrong one or whatever it may be. It's definitely out there for sure. But
I think most of my time on GameCube, honestly, was spent using the Game Boy Player for the GameCube. Yeah. So I played more old school games on it than anything, honestly.
That's interesting. But yeah, for people who are really into the GameCube, I think that could potentially be some good news with a new controller coming out when the Switch 2 drops later this year. A couple other Switch 2 notes. A recent patent, this was an article from Game Rant from a little over 12 hours ago, talking about evidently there's going to be some built-in upscaling, an AI upscaler into the GameCube, or into the Switch 2, I should say, that will convert 540p images to 1080p with higher frame rates. I always wonder what that's going to look like, because we've seen even in the anime world where they've upscaled a lot of old anime that's not always a perfect process. And now you're asking this machine to do it on the fly while you're playing. I'm curious what type of games that would target, because I would think if you're talking first person shooters or things like that, there could be some potential issues with lag or blur or things like that as the machine kind of figures it out, like the upscale. But I feel like if you're playing platform games, things where that's not as big a deal, it could potentially be really interesting. And, you know, again, love the fact that they're giving it a whirl. I'm curious as to how the technology works, and will it work well enough that maybe we'll see fewer HD 2D remasters, and instead they're just going to count on the internal hardware to do a lot of the cleaning up of these old games?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a lot of this has to do with just kind of where handheld gaming is in 2025 compared to where it was in 2017. You think of all the big name PC manufacturers that now have their own handheld PCs that run superior to the Switch, and you know, before the original Switch, only being able to run at 720p in handheld mode, that just wasn't going to be good enough anymore. So they had to kind of up what they're doing with it. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, because I still think, and this is just personal preference, there are certain games that I just don't think the best gameplay experience comes in a 8-inch screen handheld device. I think you're still, for performance concerns, you're still going to want to play in docked mode. But yeah, I'm always interested to see how older titles perform better with better hardware. And I think with the Switch 2, you should be able to enjoy that both docked and undocked, which is cool.
And to your point, just to kind of clarify that, and I left this out when I mentioned it, to clarify, it is during the handheld mode. It is not during docked mode too. So the gameplay is going to be a little different. Now, obviously, your television does a little bit of that work when you have it docked, but will it be the same as the handheld? I don't know, but
I mean, it's always run better docked in general, so you always have that to fall back on. I wonder how many people are looking for high performance gaming in handheld mode. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's a lot more than I realize. To me, the Switch is still very much a home console that I can play portable if I wanted to, but I don't typically.
Yeah, I'd love to find some stats on that. How many people actually play the Switch portably, regularly, primarily, and how many people dock it up and play it? Because as much of a topic as the Joy-Cons are, there must still be a pretty heavy contingent of people that play it undocked and mobile. But yeah, I'm actually really curious about how many people do that. Let us know in the comments of our YouTube VOD if you're someone who plays your Switch docked, or do you play it with the Joy-Cons, or with a, you know, some sort of third party device that you can hook it to on a mobile basis? That's kind of a curious question. One last note on the Switch, and this was a story from a few days ago, that it looks like the new Power Wash Simulator game, which has been announced for several other systems, is also coming to the new Switch 2. And Power Wash Simulator is one of those games that, as we've talked about a lot on this podcast, when you're looking for like these almost perfect streaming games for streamers where they can basically just chill and play this game and chat with their chat, Power Wash Simulator is always one of those pretty high up on the list, because it's pretty low. I don't say low effort. I mean, there's obviously things to do in the game, but it's certainly not Elden Ring. You know, you're going to be just spraying things off. And I still see a lot of people play the original Power Wash Simulator game, and I'm sure the second one will be really popular as well. But it's, I guess the bigger news story of this is that you've got some titles that have been previously announced for other systems that are also going to be coming out for the play, or for the Switch 2. And I'll be curious to see what other titles follow that have been announced recently for your PlayStation 5s and things like that, that may also now be able to go to the Switch.
Yeah, I seem to recall people talking about a lot of third party developers being excited to work on games for the Switch 2. So that's certainly encouraging. I've never quite understood the appeal of Power Wash Simulator. I just, like so many other games, there's a fine line between I'm doing something fun and maybe kind of low effort, low stress, and this is just you simulating work.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I'm not going to play a game that simulates filing taxes or detailing my car or.
But some people evidently will. I mean,
that's really strange to me. I know it has an audience and it does pretty well considering they're still pumping out new versions and new expansions for it. But man, that's I'm excited because I do feel like the gap had been widening over the years as far as top tier games and games that can play on the Switch. I think the Switch will never be, or Switch 2 in this case, will never be high-end PC gaming.
Right.
That's just not what they're trying to do. But it couldn't hurt to kind of bridge that gap a little bit to offer people more options for your hardware.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, again, I feel like this is maybe the first announcement, but certainly not the last of games that have been introduced that we're going to find out are also going to be compatible on the Switch 2. But that's really kind of the roundup of Switch 2 rumors and news. We'll certainly keep an eye on that because I have a feeling we'll be seeing more things start to trickle out as we head over the upcoming days and weeks. A couple other news items briefly this morning, and tag title change on SmackDown, a really good SmackDown on Friday in Barcelona. And the big news that came out of that event was that the Street Profits, shockingly to me, for the first time in 4 years, because it sure hasn't felt like it's been that long, but the Street Profits for the first time in 4 years are tag team champions. They defeat DIY to win the SmackDown tag team titles. Obviously really happy for those guys. Of course, Angelo Dawkins, a local guy from Fairfield. So always great to see him succeed. And Montez Ford is incredibly entertaining. And it's funny because this is the second time to me that they've had this new attitude, but they're not really heels because people still love them and cheer them, even though they're like more intense now. It's kind of funny that how that's worked out. Those guys are just super over. And it, first off, obviously thoughts on the Street Profits winning. And secondly, it's pretty inevitable based on the fact that we had both tag teams get confronted before the match by other tag teams that wanted the first title shot, that we're clearly headed toward some sort of multi tag team match coming up at WrestleMania.
Yeah. And I'm looking forward to it. I think we've been slowly rebuilding the relevance of the tag team division. And I think SmackDown has come a long way, probably a little farther than Raw at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I almost feel like there's a new kind of alignment distinction besides babyface and heel. There's like babyface is broken into like goofy babyface and, oh yeah, now I have to take you seriously. And it seems like with the Street Profits, yeah, they're still faces because people love them, but now you have to take them seriously.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe there was a point in time where that level of seriousness was dropping off. And I think because of that, you had to at some point give them the title or else it would have kind of seem pointless to give them this new presentation.
Yeah.
I think also it points back to USA's not giving us SmackDown Live during these European dates. You look at this tag title change, you look at some of the vignettes they showed on SmackDown. It's giving people a reason to still tune in here in the States to a show that they could easily just look up spoilers to and find out everything that happened.
Yeah. And you know, the vignettes, as you mentioned, appears that they are for Rey Fénix and for Aleister Black. We'll obviously confirm those. Rey Fénix is pretty obvious. Black is, it's fairly obvious, but it's certainly
spooky, so it must be him.
Right. It wasn't as overt as the one for Rey Fénix.
Also wasn't a guy sitting in a room by himself.
Not yet. Hopefully that's the next one, but both those guys obviously are going to be a big asset to the roster and look forward to those guys coming in over the next few weeks. But yeah, and obviously that is a good point to mention that Netflix will be showing Raw live at 3:00 Eastern time today. Normally I'd be super excited about that, but we have tennis practice at 3:00, so we won't get to watch it live. But for those who are able to do so, I think it is still preferable. I understand why USA doesn't do it. We talked about it on Friday a little bit off the air that, you know, they're still counting the ratings. They're still figuring this out, and airing it at 3:00 in the afternoon on a Friday is probably not going to get you the biggest rating compared to even a taped broadcast at 8:00. But it is another checkbox in the streaming platform, you know, battle with linear television, because Netflix can be like, well, we don't care that we might lose a few viewers, because those people can watch it taped at 8 o'clock later on that night. We're going to show it live at 3 because it's a sporting event and we want people to actually be able to see it while it happens.
And I think that more closely aligns with how WWE perceives their own product, especially now under the umbrella of TKO, where you have all these other real sporting events like, hey, you need to treat us like we're that as well.
Yeah. So if you are going to plan on watch Monday Night Raw today, it'll be Monday afternoon Raw. If you're here in the States, that is a 3 o'clock Eastern start today as they continue their European tour. One final news item. And again, we won't get too deep into this because I feel like a lot of the details on this are still a ways away, but this is a story from a few days ago, actually a couple weeks ago, where it was talking about one of the lead actors in Oshinoko being announced as the lead role in a show called Twins Hina Hima, which is an upcoming anime that will be produced with AI technology. Frontier Works is partnering with a newly founded studio. It's a very, very unfortunate name, Kaka Creation, which obviously doesn't mean the same thing in Japanese. It does in Spanish, but AI will be used for the anime. It'll be used in over 95% of the total animation cuts. It'll be broadcast on MBS starting on March the 29th. So we're going to get a good idea here in just a couple weeks what exactly this is going to look like. And again, I can't say I'm crazy about this because obviously the Japanese industry already kind of mistreats animators and now we're taking their jobs away. Like they were already paid nothing and now we're literally paying them nothing. This was not really something I thought they would jump into the deep end on. I thought maybe it'd be a little bit here and there or other aspects of the anime production that would go AI before the entire show, the entire animation, but I just thought it was fascinating, and I really am curious once it comes out, and I feel like more people are aware of it because I still feel like it's flying under the radar a bit, what people are going to say about this.
Yeah, you know, I watched the trailer, and I don't know how I feel about it because when you watch it knowing that AI has done a lot of the heavy lifting, you can't help but feel like, oh, I can tell this is AI. I don't know how I would feel if I watched it just as a trailer, like, hey, check out this new anime, and I didn't know ahead of time that this is all centered around a story of them using AI for 95% of like the background art and some of the animation cuts. Reading the article, they talk about utilizing what's known as supportive AI. It generates background art, character illustrations. They mentioned scenes like hair flowing in the wind that are highly like labor intensive. The AI is being used for that, but ultimately they have the human animators finalizing the images. I just want to know, and there's no way to get confirmation of this right now, obviously. You just want to know if this ultimately leads to less stress and long hours and just overwork for the humans involved, because that's really what you're looking to see out of this. You don't want to see these people fully replaced. You want to see them having better quality of lives because they have a manageable workload.
Yeah, I hope that's where it goes. I hope it's a case where you're not going to be taking jobs away, but rather, you know, being able to give these people just additional tools in the tool belt that allow them to do their job more efficiently and in less time so they can, you know, do that. The cynic in you, which I mean, why not? Believes that it's just going to mean they're going to double the number of anime airing because like, oh, you can now turn this episode out. We can give you two instead of one. And you hope that's not the case.
God knows the market isn't already flooded.
Right. Oh, my goodness. There's so many shows out there for sure. But, you know, more is more. And I'm sure that'll be some of it. But the other thing, too, obviously, is, you know, does it allow for smaller studios to, you know, create more work, too, because yeah, they're going to be able to save on upfront costs to some degree and manpower and things like that. So there are potential positives to it, but every time AI is involved, you hold your breath because it feels like before we get to how it might be positively used, we have to go through a bunch of crap about how it'll be negatively used first. And then maybe we'll circle back around to where it's a positive benefit for the industry. But it'll be really interesting to see the reviews on this show, especially from people, like you said, that maybe have no idea that there's any AI involvement in it, kind of what they think about it. Because at the end of the day, it's going to be judged whether it's good or bad.
Yeah.
And I will be curious to see. I mean, obviously, they're putting some heavy hitters behind it, bringing in one of the lead actors from Oshinoko, kind of putting her as the face of this anime, having her kind of headlining the article. But
to your point, I did really think it was going to be the non-art roles that would be just totally consumed by AI before we got to the actual art side of it. Like, if you'd have told me that all the translations have already been moved to full AI and localization to full AI, even dubbing before you got to the animation would have made a lot more sense to me. So it's kind of interesting. I think if nothing else, it just means that maybe some of your favorite manga that wouldn't have been adapted otherwise may actually stand a chance of seeing some anime adaptation.
Yeah.
I just hope that there doesn't end up being a backlash against the current industry talent that sign on to these projects, because people can be pretty unhinged.
Yeah, and that's something else to keep an eye on as well. You know, what ramifications come of that and what people think of these people being involved in that. But yeah, it's going to be really fascinating. I'm kind of curious to see what the first episode of this show looks like and what the reaction to it is when it finally comes out here in a couple weeks. Ready to wrap this thing up?
Let's go.
The Empire Express wraps up this week's this Monday edition of the Nerdcast News Report. On NXT Roadblock last Tuesday, Stephanie Vaquer defeated Julie to win the NXT Women's Championship. She is now both the Women's Champion and the Women's North American Champion. Were you surprised if Vaquer won?
Yes and no, I guess. You know, I feel like people have suggested online that Julie was kind of banged up and needs some time off. Between the two superstars, I think Stephanie Vaquer is the most ready for being a megastar. I think she's the total package. I guess maybe I'm surprised it happened as soon as it did, but I'm kind of curious now what they'll do with the North American title.
Yeah.
Styx keyboardist Lawrence Gowan said in an interview that the band's new album Circling From Above will be out in late May and that the album is, quote, very strong. Looking forward to it?
Yeah, I think so. I did not get to listen to a lot of their last album that came out that was kind of recorded during the pandemic, which they even admitted maybe wasn't the best time to record an album, but they seem to really have a good foundation for this one, and hopefully it'll be another strong release from those guys. We may be getting a warm weather Survivor Series. Fightful's reporting that San Diego will host what used to be the Thanksgiving Eve tradition. It seems like the home of the San Diego Padres, Petco Park, would host it. Thoughts about an outdoor Survivor Series, especially with War Games?
You know, I think anytime you can do a big outdoor stadium show, you do a big outdoor stadium show. I hope there's just not any weird, unseasonably bad weather for it. Also, just kind of waiting for them to announce it'll be a 2-night show.
True.
Evidently, season 3 of Sound Euphonium will not be the end of the beloved series, as Kyoto Animation has announced a movie titled Sound Euphonium The Final to come out in 2026. Excited to see more of the series?
I'm excited to see The Final and The Final Part 2 and The Final Part 3, because that seems to be the Japanese way.
Great title.
Yes, I am excited. I still need to finish season 3. It's been really good. It's been great to kind of get back with the characters. This was just a really well-done series, and hopefully it has a really nice conclusion, if indeed the movie is the final. And finally, to follow up on a story we reported on our music podcast, after rumors we saw reported the other day, Steve Lukather has clarified that he will not be playing on any potential new Van Halen, but rather working on it as a co-producer. Kind of makes you wonder who may end up, or if they do bring in anybody from the outside to work on this.
Yeah, it's a great question. To me, the one obvious name is Wolfgang Van Halen. He replaced Michael Anthony and Van Halen in the later days of the band. And also, when you look at his project, Mammoth WVH, he plays every instrument on it. So there's no reason why it couldn't just be he and Alex that finished, put the finishing touches on this stuff, and maybe retain some of Eddie's playing on there. Could be kind of a cool family thing.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty neat, honestly, and really a good way to pay tribute to Eddie Van Halen and allow the family to kind of have their own project, which I think would make everybody feel a little better about it too, that you're not just trying to dig this up as a cash grab. But really cool story there, and we'll certainly continue to follow up on that on our Hard Rock Empire, which you have not listened to. It dropped last night, and you can check that out. Another really good episode of music. A reminder, we will be back again on Wednesday, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, with the Wednesday edition of the Nerdcast News Report. We'll be back on Friday as well. And then, of course, another episode of that Hard Rock Empire next Sunday, or this Sunday, at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll talk about the music of March the 7th. But that is going to wrap things up for today. A big thanks to everybody who joined us. A big thanks to Mike in the studio. And a big thanks to you wherever and whenever you may have listened to this. That's going to wrap things up. We'll join you again on Wednesday for another edition of the Nerdcast News Report. Until then, don't forget to join the Empire, the Nerdcast Empire.